Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this edition of Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style, coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia. This is PPTS, presented as a service to the progressive community by the Coffee Party USA Radio Network. PPTS highlights the activities, activists, and activism of the progressive movement. Join our host and special guests as we discuss the most interesting and important topics of the day. If you have a cause, an issue, a campaign, or candidacy that you're actively engaged with, please feel free to give us a call at 646-929-2495 and share with us your question or comment. Join the show's co-host and producer, Progressive Patty, in our lively chat. Go to the bottom of this episode page, sign into the chat room, and let us know what you are doing about it. All opinions are welcome. For the Coffee Party USA and Progressive Politics Tennessee Style, welcome to today's show. Please make welcome our host and friend, the Tennessee Progressive.
Well, howdy, neighbor. Come on up. Sit on the porch a spell. It's a little bit of a wet day outside. It's humid. But, you know, it's early. It's not too hot. We got some iced tea and some cookies up here. Come, nice to see you. Nice to see you. Glad you're here. Coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River from Columbia on this Sunday, May 20th, I guess. Nerd, I guess it's the 18th. 18th of May. Missing a few brain cells this morning. I am the Tennessee Progressive, and this is Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. You're listening on the Coffee Party Radio Network, or Netroots Radio Network. We're working to take this show on the road, and for the Netroots Radio Network, and hopefully the Coffee Party as well, to Detroit, Michigan, USA, and to Netroots Nation 14. And we're looking forward to doing live radio pretty much 24/7 for the entirety of Netroots Nation gathering, where activist activism and activities are the topic of the day, and we interact and have interviews with some of the foremost thought leaders in the nation in a political realm and others. It's a gathering for, as much as anything else, grassroots activists and organizers to come together and learn strategies and tactics. It's a place where people who are involved, who are doing something about it, get together, and I highly recommend it to you. There will be over 80 sessions over 4 days, including keynoters and learning sessions, teaching sessions, sharing sessions, information sessions. This is where the grassroots organizers of the United States tend to come together and report for and to each other about their activities and what's going on and how it's going. to get more engagement, involvement, and to learn new ways of doing things. And I'm very much excited about the idea of taking the team up there for you, our listener. We'll be doing live radio, as I say. We'll have interviews and share some time together. All our shows will be live. And we hope to be involved with coffee party activities as well while we're there. And so that's going to be in a little later on, July, June, something. And 14th through the 20th, actually. We're going to see if we can make that happen. At any rate, that's really the topic of today's show. What are you doing about it? And we want to reflect upon what we've been talking about for the last 3 weeks. The war for reason, or as some might say, the war on reason. We've had some interesting responses this week, unsolicited, from the media about that very topic. And we find it to be interesting, to say the least. And we'll talk about some of those things today. You can call us and join the conversation by dialing the area code 646-929-2495 and let us know what's on your mind when you hear my voice. You'll be live. Yeah, we ask that you let us know in advance what your topic is. If you're in the chat room, it's easy. You can let her rip in the chat room. We ask that you observe either way, either on the telephone or in the chat room, two rules of the house. And the first one is, play nice. Remember that you're a guest in my house. And follow the civility pledge. If you don't know what that is, you can go to coffeepartyusa.com and read it. Our goal here is to engage with those of like or differing opinions and engage in civil discourse about the issues of the day. And we're very proud to say that we do that rather consistently on a regular basis around here. We entertain notions of all kinds, from opinions of every stripe. You don't have to be of a particular political ideology. You don't have to be an American citizen. You don't have to be in agreement with anything you hear on this show. In fact, we have some of our best shows when we have differing opinions involved. We've made friends with callers from across the world, from every political stripe, from socialist and anarchist to ultra-conservative Tea Party members. Tea Party has made itself a bit of a sham this weekend. They called for 10 million American patriots to come to Washington, D.C. and depose the president of the United States by force. And to haul him before their tribunal, he and others, and then install a government administration that they more favor. The 10 million turned into about 100, and they sat on the lawn, I guess, in Lafayette Park and acted bad. There's a lot of sound clips that are available freely on the web for those who would like to hear them. I'm going to play them on this show because I simply don't want to. Turned into a bit of a lark, and brought the Republican Party, which could not possibly use any more negative PR, and the Tea Party itself into pretty significant disrepute around the nation. Laughingstock is not really a fair or effective description. But there are a lot of people out there who are really, 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 really wanting to damage this nation, damage those who think differently than they do in whatever way possible, and to make sure, as opposed to doing something about it, the only thing that gets done is that they wish very much to continue to make sure that those elected officials who are sent to Washington, D.C. to represent the citizens of this nation cannot do their sworn oath duty job. And there's some interesting conversations that could be had around that, especially when you try to figure out what it is that they want. I can't speak for them. I wish somebody could that would come on our air and explain this weekend from their point of view. We have a couple of reporters from Netroots Radio who have been over at Lafayette Park trying to get legitimate interviews with some people. They had some interesting people lined up. Then I guess their organizer didn't show up. He was in Michigan setting up a militia convention or something. And even the organizer couldn't be bothered to show up in Washington, D.C., so it's interesting. We don't know for sure about where that goes or how it reads or anything like that. We're trying to figure it out. There's an article in Salon that talks about, came out Thursday, the Republican stated political strategy is centered around the notion that the GOP knows that if it can damage the economy, the average voter might blame it on the president. And originating an alternate, I saw it in Salon. And the lead line is, the Republicans have their strategy and they're sticking to it, even though they know it involves destroying lives and even killing people. It's working so well, based on a simple statistical reality. The majority of Americans, depending on which survey you look at, especially between 60% and 75%, cannot name which political party controls the House of Representatives, which party controls the Senate, or either. Because most Americans don't know who controls Congress. When Congress misbehaves, as they've been doing for 6 years now, most Americans aren't sure who to blame. It's called the Republican Chaos Strategy, and it's based entirely on this single statistical and political reality. And common sense suggests that well over 90% of Americans know that Barack Obama is the president and that he is a Democrat. The Republicans know this, too, and it's the other half of their strategy. Therefore, according to Tom Hartman, what the Republicans know is that if they can damage the American economy and create damage to American working people, the average voter, not realizing it was exclusively the Republicans who did it, are going to assume that the president and the Democratic Party he is a member of must bear some or maybe even all of the responsibility. damage the country, and you damage the Democratic Party just in time for the midterm elections. Now, this has been going on for 6 years now. The Republicans have been hard at work damaging America and the American people, he says. When the Democrats briefly controlled Congress, Nancy Pelosi got passed legislation that removed tax incentives for big companies to move jobs overseas and reversed those incentives to encourage companies to move factories back to the United States. It seemed to be a no-brainer, but Republicans filibustered it in the Senate, and it died. Why? Because it would have helped the economy. It would have lowered unemployment, it would have brought back good-paying jobs, and it would have helped the American people. The chaos strategy dictates that you cannot allow these things to happen when there is a Democrat in the White House. Under their theory, if anything positive is done for the American people by Congress, the American people, who don't know which party controls Congress, will assume that the president and his Democrats must have had something to do with it. Therefore, the damage goes to the Democrats. Since 3 days after last Christmas, Republicans have denied millions of Americans an extension of long-term unemployment benefits. The reality on the ground is that this has torn apart families, increased child and spousal abuse, increased divorces, increased suicides, exacerbated homelessness, despair, and depression. Why would the Republicans do this and do so publicly and gleefully? Because they know, consistent with the Republican chaos strategy, that most Americans, when they go to the polls, won't realize that it was exclusively the Republicans who were responsible for this. They only know there's a Democrat in the White House, and they know who he is, and they think that the Democrats must have something to do with it. The strategy will continue to work as long as they can keep the American people ignorant of who controls which branches of Congress and how Republicans manipulate the filibuster in the Senate, as we saw this past week, which is... my thanks to Tom Hartman and Salon and Alternate for that article that I will link in the chat room and encourage you to read. It's not necessarily because I fundamentally agree, although I do, with what is going on and why it's going on, but it's a rather clear indication of what I consider to be a factual reality. And there's the article in the chat room for you to enjoy. What I'd like to highlight on is that there are those who are not necessarily frivolously dedicated to civil discourse or to the American political system. The Republican Party has seen this strategy as an invocation of its own destruction. And their general party line is, yeah, we're doing it, but we're shooting ourselves in both feet, but that's okay. As long as it hurts somebody else more than it hurts us, we don't care. We saw this week that two bills, which the Republican Party leadership in the Congress thoroughly embraced and endorsed, found itself filibustered in the Senate by Republicans. They filibustered the bill not only that they created, but they agreed to, which is where this general concept began. And that was, yeah, we know it hurts us, but it hurts you more. So we're going to do it because our goals are the same as they had been for 6 years, to make absolutely certain that governance does not occur on this president's watch. And, of course, this president is letting people know that he's, you know, he's trying very hard every day to make sure that the American people are safe, that they have the opportunity to become engaged and involved in the political process, that some of the goals if not all the goals of the platform that got him elected twice, are at least paid attention to. He has not been able to do much of what he wanted to do when he was first elected. And much of that lies at the feet of the Republican Party, who decided shortly before his inauguration that they were going to spend their time making absolutely certain that he was completely unsuccessful. Now, this is politics at its worst, but it is politics. And the American people have suffered for it. Others around the world have suffered for it as well. It's a classic case that will be studied for centuries on how not to do politics. And the Coffee Party exists in a different plane, in a different level, that believes in civil discourse, where people who have differing opinions can come together in the same place at the same time and honestly and respectfully discuss, bring forward their views, and create civil discourse that might create a potential solution that, while it might not make both of them completely happy, they both will see positive movement forward for the issues, candidacies, candidates, programs, and policies that they agree with. At the end of the day, if America moves forward, it's a good thing. A lot of people ask, well, what do you stand for? We stand for returning the power of the government to the people. And we have issues that are specific, and there are more that we talk about on a daily basis, and that's okay. But the mission of the Coffee Party is really very simple. The mission statement of the Coffee Party USA says unequivocally, simply, what it is that we're about. And you're invited to go to coffeepartyusa.com and read the mission statement, which says that our mission statement is that we are building, nurturing, and connecting communities to reclaim our government for the people. We envision a nation of diverse communities sharing a culture of informed public engagement where our sacred right to vote is the only currency of our democracy. We live the values we want to see in our government as our core value. Our core values are civility, which we empathize and engage with one another, exercising humility, listening, honesty, and respect in order to provide an emotionally safe environment even when we disagree. We seek the truth, learn the facts, and share with others to make informed decisions relevant to the ongoing improvement of ourselves, the nation, and our shared overlapping lives. We believe in authenticity and transparency. Because we are human, in our genuine quest for democracy, we may stumble, but we will do so in plain sight with trust and expecting a hand up from one another. We say what we mean and we do what we say, and in doing so, we strive to create a country that is whole and undiminished. Inclusiveness is one of our core values. We reach out, engage, and connect with people from diverse communities, backgrounds, cultures, and political perspectives. We are engaged in transpartisan politics and independence. We engage in political and social bridge building for the sake of finding solutions to common problems, working above and beyond ideological dogmas, putting the country first. That's very interesting, and it makes sense if you understand what it is that the Coffee Party is all about. We're a grassroots, nonpartisan movement that aims to restore the principles and spirit of democracy in America. We started on Facebook as a popular fan page in January of 2010. Since then, we've blossomed into a national nonprofit social welfare 501c4 organization with a network of over 500,000 people and dozens of local chapters. Restoring democracy in America to the Coffee Party includes 1. Identifying and advocating for legislative fixes to reform campaign finance laws, Wall Street regulations, and the tax code. And 2. Promoting cultural changes to address political disengagement, polarization, and widespread misinformation. Our entire activities plan center around encouraging inclusive, civil, fact-based, solution-oriented dialogue online in public places such as coffee houses, which we meet, share a cup of coffee, talk, become informed and engaged as fellow Americans rather than as members of political parties, which is we meet as citizens. Those who follow this show and know me know that I really like that idea. Because we believe we share common goals as a people, not as a party, not as an affiliate of a party, not as a registered voter in a political ideology, but as a people, as a nation. We all want to live in safe communities. We want access to well-paid jobs that will allow us to provide for our families, help us secure a decent education for our children, and allow us to access adequate health care. Coffee Party generally calls upon the American people to transcend hyperpartisanship that is so common today and move together toward organizing communities around the mutual desire for ongoing, responsive civic engagement. We understand that we must act boldly to not only break the cycle of corruption, but also recommit to the concept of a government of, by, and for the people. We are the government. The government is us. We want to fix the problems in our government, not turn against the idea of governance. We need more in quantity and quality direct engagement with our government officials and with one another. We want to demand more officially sanctioned activities such as town hall meetings with officials and public reviews of policies with an invitation for public comment. We want to create effective civic engagement opportunities by organizing informal community meetings in which we invite fellow Americans to exchange ideas. And by encouraging the use of internet communications, social networking, polling techniques, to more effectively inform and involve the broad public community in interactive debate. We operate entirely and independently of political parties, and we do not endorse candidates. We talk about issues. We talk about those things that are meaningful and important to the American people and other peoples around the world. We do so passionately and we hope independently of any issue or strident idealistic freezing or limiting, because the show intends, this show, every show on the Coffee Party Radio Network, intends to live out these principles, these ideas that we feel have not been effectively used in quite a while. And it's important to us that we at least stand as a beacon of opportunity by example to all our elected leaders that there is another and, we believe, better way to tackle and address the issues of such critical importance these days to the American people. And if you go to the CoffeePartyUSA.com site, one of the things you can look at is our radio network and find out how others are reacting or what reactions or where you can find people to become involved with or listen to or argue with on a weekly basis, both in and out the network. For instance, this show kind of kicks off the week. And it's called Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. And you can follow the show Mondays, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Pacific Time. We have Press One for Democracy with Dan Aronson. Thursdays, 3 p.m., we have Lunch with Loudon with Janine Loudon. Saturdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time, we have Politics Done Right with Egberto Willis. And Thursday, we have Move to Amend with Egberto Willis and Laura Bonham. Of course, we have recorded pods of most of our shows. All of my shows are podcasts, archived, both on the Coffee Party Radio site and on iTunes. It's also on SoundCloud and the iHeart Network. And the show is replayed each Sunday morning at 6 a.m. Eastern Time. That's a change that you'll want to note on your calendar. We're doing a change to the replay on the NetRidge Radio Network so that we can engage more people. And we believe that is, we're testing it. We may move the show's replay around a little bit until we can get a sweet spot where we can have more interaction. And if you have a time period in mind that you think would help us reach more people, please feel free to let us know. And we will do that. So there's a real opening available for anyone who would like to become involved. You can call us at area code 646-929-2495, and we'll talk about what's on your mind. We ask that you play nice and come prepared. We've been investigating the war for reason, or the war on reason, these past few days. A Salon article, or alternate article, spoke rather directly to what people like Senator Mitch McConnell, who's in the fight for his political life right now in the Commonwealth of Kentucky, where he's tied with a very strong Democrat, and with the likelihood that he'll probably lose that election. One of the arguments is, well, we've got power in the Senate. We've got power in the House. You don't want to send me packing. A lot of people have said, well, Mitch, in fact, that's exactly what we want to do. And we're going to send your junior partner packing, too. We no longer believe that you represent the vested interests of the citizens of the Commonwealth of Kentucky, and you are unwilling by your actions in the Senate to do anything on behalf of the American people, and your junior partner is trying to find a light word, off the rails, out of touch with Kentucky, and we believe with the nation, and we want people who more represent our values than their own political survival. And Ms. Grimes is doing a bang-up job with her campaign, and it's an interesting story playing out that we get to observe and comment on without necessarily taking up a political side in the issue. Mr. McConnell has in the two challengers, actually. He has a Tea Party challenger in the name of Matt Blevins, and of course, Ms. Grimes is the Democratic challenger. And there will be a primary in Commonwealth of Kentucky in 2 days. And what I would like to encourage every Kentuckian son of the Commonwealth to do is to know where to vote, go vote. And let us know that you did by contacting us at feedback@netrootsradio.com, or you can click on the email link under any of the radio host names and let us know. The idea that we've been investigating is where reason rules, people get involved and engaged. Even if they're people who disagree with a particular position or tenet of someone else, there are grassroots organizations all across this country. Approximately 4,000 of them will be represented in Detroit. And we're looking forward to engaging and becoming involved right now, because there's just no other time to talk about it. The actions and reactions around the country in the past week have been rather interesting. We've got to remember that what we're talking about is engagement of the citizen in the political process, because that is where democracy lives, and laws and legislation and things like that are the byproducts of democracy in action. And we see an awful lot of places around our nation that there's some serious trouble going on with those who would try to suppress not only the vote, but democracy itself. Some of these issues that are so important to us that are causing such division around political entities, around political ideologies, and then around the issues that are facing us as a nation today, there's not a lot of discourse, that's the word I'm looking for, discourse going on. And we want that discourse to be going on. And we want to talk about it on our blogs. I have a blog at the Daily Kos. We have a blog at the Coffee Party USA Network that I invite and encourage you to read for issues that are going on within the Coffee Party, and there are several. To look at your news sources and understand that you're most likely going to get particularly painted version of the news. Interestingly enough, the issues are not in sync across party lines. One party's talking about some things, another party's talking about others. This week we celebrated the 60th anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education Supreme Court ruling, with a lot of history being relived, and an interesting accommodation by the people who were really leading the issue on reminding us of what that was all about, saying that it's not over. There's as much segregation in education in the United States today as there ever has been, and give compelling arguments to that end. And we talk about things like, you know, Governor Christie and Bridgegate. And at the same time, we're talking about why is it that we're finding ourselves with more poverty than we've had in the history of this nation? Why is it that there seems to be crazy loose everywhere you look? That, you know, when all else fails, that there's a party who thinks that they can unrule the next president of the United States by spending 6 months demoralizing and denigrating a potential candidate in the name of Hillary Clinton. And I don't say that as it necessarily favors my position, because I've pretty sure most people don't know what my position is. And we see, thanks to one of our radio hosts and writers at Daily Coast, Egberto Willis has shared an article on the coast talking about the fact that Southern Senate Democrats surprisingly are leading in red states. And Allison Lundgren Grimes is tied with Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell. And incumbent Democratic Senator Mark Pryor in Arkansas is beating Republican Congressman Tom Cotton by 10 points. Georgia Democratic Senatorial candidate Michelle Nunn is running from within 4 points to even in every potential Republican opponent she's got, according to the latest polls. There are many, many reasons that I believe that the American citizen is waking up and starting to vote more in line with their own interests as opposed to party interests on both sides. It's been a few months, but talking heads at the time had it already a foregone conclusion that Republicans would win the Senate and keep the House. Now, neither of those is a given. The right has been using effective political traps for several decades, Willis declares, and it's also time to understand that the health care law, the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, is helping a vast majority of citizens in both Kentucky and Arkansas. The Moral Mundian movement in Georgia, now being legislatively threatened as of this week, it's highlighting the immorality of the state leaving thousands of citizens without health care. This is happening in states across the Union as more states every day or every week are deciding to engage in the Medicaid expansion program. And politicians that really want to support the poor and working middle class have a template. They need to watch these politicians maneuver a citizenry malleable enough to enter their sphere. These politicians seem to get it. They're doing it their way. But they're doing it from position of citizen as opposed to political hack. And every time you hear the word Benghazi, you need to understand that that is a political ploy to denigrate a potential candidate for president, which right now is polling at over 60% across the nation. The Republicans are trying to create a select committee to investigate a false narrative on a false and tragic story. It, according to Chuck Todd, who said that this is occurring because Republicans do not like the truths revealed from every other investigation that they've had. He says he hears Republicans say that there are unanswered questions. Well, says Willis, no. All the questions have been answered. There are just some people who don't like the answers and that wish the answers were somehow more conspiratorial or convincingly deleterious, I guess. Their focus is an issue. It's a great question, having a conversation about the policy, having a debate and investigation as to whether the policy is working, our response to the Arab Spring, and if we did the right thing with the light footprint in Libya. To sit here and investigate talking points seems to be totally missing the larger point, but that's really not what they're trying to do. They're trying to do is to attach Benghazi, their version of what they're saying happened around and in Benghazi, to Hillary Clinton. They're taking on the Clinton family again. The entire Republican Party, the Tea Party, have decided that they're going to determine who the Democratic candidate's going to be. And they're working very hard to make sure that she doesn't have a chance to get her head above water and take a breath between now and 2016. In the meantime, that's a distraction to what they're actually attempting to make happen in 2014, which is at the state level. Because state legislatures are in trouble too, not among the least of which is perhaps the most red state in America, that being Kansas, whose governor is under attack from within his own party and by his own people as being just a little bit too crazy to deal with. And they're asking him pointed questions that he cannot or will not answer. And he effectively has had to admit that the tax cuts that he's imposed have now come to the point where his state is financially broke. And it can't operate. They've cut everything that's imaginable to cut in the state of Kansas. And while the citizens suffer through lack of, you know, medical care, education, housing security, food security, employment security, he's fiddling around Topeka. And he ran into himself this week, and all of a sudden, he's in big trouble. Kansas political leaders of the Republican and Tea Party nature are trying to find an ultra-moderate Republican that they can run for the governorship election, and they can't find one. One of the reasons for that is because they have, as a national entity, pulled their party so far to the right that even they can't reach it. Citizens are saying in overwhelming terms, no, I believe that's a bridge too far. And we're not going to support that, and anybody who adheres to that notion, we're not going to endorse, and we're not going to elect either at our courthouse, our state house, or the White House. We're not going to send elected representatives to Washington, D.C. to employ these tactics, because I guess there's just only so much red you can deal with. And interestingly enough, one of their strongest defenses is that there's only so much blue you can deal with. Because after all, our ideological differences are so profound right now that while the Democrats can effectively state their case, we cannot. Therefore, they're winning. The truth of the matter is that after 6 years, American citizens are waking up. They're waking up to their citizenship responsibilities. They are registering and qualifying to vote, and they are challenging those people who would try to attempt to take away their right to vote. Successfully, I might add. That's what we've been advocating on this show for years now. That, you know, we want everybody to vote, and we need a strong voter turnout in November to defend democracy, because the intent of those who are the arch-villains of this sordid plan involve removing democracy from the American landscape. And as we've seen with those who would take away democracy from America, even by these patriots, they call themselves, who attempted to gather on the Washington Mall this weekend with an expectation of 10 million patriots they called for. I think it's the max that I've heard is 300 actually showed up. And their stated intent was to create a coup d'etat against the government of the United States, forcing the American president to resign and be tried by their tribunal, and install a president who believes correctly, they say, which is a corporatist plutocratic theocracy. That's their answer. And beyond the hilarity of the event itself, there's a very deep-seated issue that needs to be addressed. There are a number of people who, at least by their email, their logins, support these notions. It's been led by a major general who believes that, or at least has said that he believes, that President Obama should be taken out into the public place and shot, executed. Now, there are limits to what society admits or accepts, okay? It's a simple fact that we have to deal with the reality that lies before us. This thing that Republicans and Tea Party terrorists created was called Operation American Spring. And they called for 10 million, and the Tea Party, which isn't even popular among Republicans, who aren't popular among Americans in general, and are only marginally less unpopular than the Tea Party, thought they could bring the unwashed masses down on D.C. and force President Obama to step down. Their intent was to arrest him, try members of his administration, and appoint a junta to run the country in accordance with the Constitution, because, you know, the Constitution allows for the appointment of juntas by rebellious groups. And many of them were encouraged to expect violence. One of the organizers, Harry Riley, predicted in December it will be painful. Some people will die because the government will not be nonviolent. Some of us will end up in a cell. Many may be injured. But also in January, this Riley reported it promised that at least 10 million people would show up. Didn't turn out that way. According to Right Wing Watch, who counted 100, with the response that the claim of 10 million was off by just 10 million. And while we knew generally that it would fizzle, it would have the impact of a KKK rally or a Nazi march through the suburbs of Chicago. You know, a few desultory jeers and the revolution's over. But their claims to represent the will of the American people seem proven to be a little off. They call themselves patriots, but the founding fathers' generation had just a little bit more get up and go. And there was a list of excuses why nobody showed up. While, you know, you may feel hesitant to laugh at people showing a lack of mental ability, that's not polite. It's not civil. One of the more interesting characters at play in this whole deal is a guy by the name of Jim Garrow. A guy who also said that President Obama, quote, Obama should be stood against the wall and shot. He was concerned that President Obama would shut down the Washington area traffic camera feed so people wouldn't see the masses descending on the Capitol. And I had no doubt that he was certainly hoping the feeds would be shut down so nobody could see the trickle. If images weren't appearing, it actually was because organizing weren't posting them out of embarrassment, but they're not going away. They're gathering again in Michigan this weekend right now with the Freedom Summit Prepare to Govern, which is hosted by none other than Jim Garrow, who could not find himself available to be here for this 10 million man march. And they had a bunch of leaders, 12 keynoters for this address this weekend. I'm going to put their story given to us by Politicus USA. I'm going to link to that in the chat room and encourage you to flick through some of those links to find out some of the realities that they had to deal with. Okay? Try to come to understand that there are a lot of issues affecting people in this country right now, today. People who feel a need to express their frustration and outrage against what they have been told to believe is a system that is not functioning. Part of the reason involvement here is they cannot give strong arguments for why they believe that it is in the best interest of the nation for them to have an armed revolution to take out the President of the United States, try members of his administration en masse, create a junta to control the government along the dictates of what they believe it should be done. And it's interesting that they talk about ruling according to the Constitution when what the largest portion of this group wants is the removal of the Constitution itself. 17 amendments, 7 departments of government, less government, less government, less government. Well, there comes a point at which, and we've been pretty much engaged at that, reaching that point since 1990, when you can only cut so much government and have government at all, much less effective government. And if they would but take a moment to look with an unjaundiced eye toward those things that have gone on in the last 6 years, they would find out that this president has probably come closer to meeting their dreams and goals than any other president in history. But there's a problem with this guy, you see. The first lie became the baseline. He wasn't American. Then he wasn't a Christian. Then he wasn't born here. Then he was, and it started at the behest of these same Republicans who before the inauguration met and created an outline of a plan of intervention and intrusion whereby this president and his administration would not be able to govern the American people. Now, there's a problem with that. I've had people from the Republican Party who are office holders in Washington, D.C. at state levels and in local communities come on this show and tell me why it is that they feel that their intent to overwhelm the democratic process in America is justified. That's why archives are wonderful things. Every word is recorded for posterity. You can give us a call with your ideas at 646-929-2495. Let us know how you feel the war for reason is going. There's some excellent stuff if you're looking around, you know, for reasons that you can come up with for things that matter. Now, I want you to know that the Coffee Party is very much engaged in creating options and alternatives to what's going on, but we're doing it through the envisionment of civil discourse. It's not that you have to have a particular line, but we do believe that we need to remove money from politics. We need to make sure that we understand as a nation that money is not speech and that corporations are not people. We need to reform the tax code in America so that it is fair for all people. Now, this is what some are calling the redistribution of wealth. Well, if there is a distribution of wealth as a result of coming into alignment with democratic values in our tax code, okay. Because I'll guarantee you the majority of the distribution is going to go to the bottom 90% of American people. And if that is the result, we won't be sad. If we provide health care for our children who need it, food for our children who are hungry, 1 in 3 American children, well, now it was 1 in 5. Now it's 1 in 3 American children will be hungry at some point during today without the ability to solve that problem. We find that to be objectionable. I find it to be objectionable that there are 76 million Americans who are having issues with the fact they cannot, regardless of level or experience or pay, find meaningful work in this country. And there are those who are very much in favor of that continuing, including the very large majority of the Republican and virtually all of the Tea Party. I don't say that begrudgingly. I'm mad about it. And I want to do something about it. And I know for a fact that if you will be registered and qualified to vote for your primary and for the general election in 2014, there's a lot we can do. I also know that if you don't, and if you don't vote and stay home, whether for lack of caring or anger or frustration or anything else, you could see a change to this country that you never saw coming that will be impossible to replace. Democracy is not something you regain. Democracy is not something that you regain. Democracy lost is democracy extinct. Democracy is an experiment across the world throughout the arc of history has been a very fragile experiment in the first place. The constitutional project of America has been ongoing since about 1750, and it took till 1789 for us to have a document that we could all begin to argue about. Heard a compelling argument about democracy recently, which talked about the fact that democracy only happens when people are empowered to do it. And that comes from the people themselves. And liberal democracies, such as we have in this country, it's important that people are empowered to interact and engage their government and their leaders, because the leaders work for the people. And while you may be hearing, you know, Daryl Issa saying other things, or Mitch McConnell, or even Harry Reid, or Nancy Pelosi, or name your candidate, I don't care. They must understand that they work for and are employed by and responsible to the American citizen. And we have to do our part as citizens to hold them to that view, to that understanding. And if they do not respond to their electors, they must be replaced. Far above any personal differences, it is democracy we're talking about. And that should trump their political ideology. It's a tough statement to make, but it's one that is easy to support if you understand what it is that we're talking about. Give us a call at 646-929-2495. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back. And I want you to understand that we're looking to see what you're going to do about it. and answer a question that generally comes from buddy and musician Pete Seeger. Stay with us. This is Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. We'll be back.
Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? They say in Harlan County there are no neutrals there. You'll either be a Union man or a thug for J.H. Blair. Which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? My daddy was a miner, and I'm a miner's son. He'll be with you fellow workers until this battle's won. Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Sing it!
Which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Oh, workers, can you stand it? Tell me how you can. Will you be a lousy scab, or will you be a man?
Which side are you on? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on? Which side are you on?
Come all of you good workers, good news to you I'll tell, of how the good old Union has come in here to dwell.
Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on? Tell me, which side are you on, boys? Which side are you on?
Hello everyone, this is John Cashin with the Coffee Party USA's Civics Minute. It is a time for the muckrakers to return. In the early 20th century, writers, photographers, and journalists stepped up to expose the injustices of their day. Back then, anything could be done to make a profit at the expense of the workers and the consumers. Among some of the practices were farmers being charged unfair rates by the railroad industry to move their produce, packing industries that didn't concern themselves with health and safety issues, and deplorable working conditions were being placed upon the workers at many factories, including the children that were also working as laborers. At the same time, there were many local, state, and federal elected leaders that were profiting by allying themselves with these industries at the expense of the public. Theodore Roosevelt used the term muckraker when he delivered his The Man with the Muckrake speech on April 15, 1906 in Washington, D.C. He stated, "In Pilgrim's Progress, The Man with the Muckrake is set forth as an example of him whose vision is fixed on carnal instead of spiritual things. Yet he also typifies the man who in this life consistently refuses to see the aught that is lofty and fixes his eyes with solemn intentness on that which is vile and debasing. Now it is very necessary that we should not flinch from seeing what is vile and debasing. There is filth on the floor, and it must be scraped up with a muckrake. And there are times and places where this service is the most needed of all the services that can be performed. Today, a muckraker has become known as someone that searches out and publicly exposes real or apparent misconduct of a prominent individual or business. But this kind of reporting has been playing second fiddle to the sensational 24/7 style of reporting being employed by the cable networks today. Tactics that strive to get the most profit at the expense of everyone else hasn't disappeared. And with today's social media and the ability of everyone to be citizen journalists, the need for the muckraker to expose these practices is more important than ever, so they can be held in check once and for all. Stay tuned for more Civics Minute segments as you listen to your favorite Coffee Party USA Blog Talk radio shows. From Paducah, Kentucky, this is John Cashin. Good day, everyone.
Welcome back to Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style. I am the Tennessee Progressive. We're coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River. We apologize to our listeners for the technical error, which caused us to be silent for a while. We're back, and we will continue beyond our normal two-hour limit to fill in the rest of the show. You're invited to listen to the archive of the show. We'll make sure that we edit out the silence and recreate the rest of the show. We're talking about the war on reason or the war for reason. It's the fifth battlefield of eight that we're going to be investigating in this war on the poor. And it's amazing how many people are suddenly finding themselves in that group. And one of the things that we're learning is that if you are finding yourself frustrated with the American government or American politicians, one of the most likely reasons for that is that you are newly poor. Now, what does that mean? It means you're not middle class. It means you're not upper class. Among the entitled, it means that you're an American citizen who is not receiving adequate redress of your grievance from your government. And that's what that means. So the increased frustration level across the country comes as much from disagreement with political stripes as it does from new realities that perhaps you've never had before. And that's important. It's terribly important. And if you find yourself more frustrated, one of the reasons that you may do so is that the things you need from your government are not being provided, or that things your government is providing are not things you need. And this additional frustration on top of the things which have, without your permission or against your intent, you didn't cause this to happen, but you still have to deal with the reality of it. And that is, as much as anything else, an understanding of how you can identify what is going on right now in your world at the kitchen table. It's terribly impossible to understand how it is that an American government, given its nature and its history, can be causing such frustration for people. We need go no further than to look at the recent shutdown of government in the United States to understand that when you, by your failure to act, cause millions of people to be unemployed immediately, many of whom have not been paid for that time that they were unemployed and have not gotten their jobs back, you've created a bunch of new people in the lower class. And it's terribly important for us to understand that as you go about your daily life, the things that occur to you as being significant at your kitchen table are being shared by people you've never met in a position they've never been in either. And what we try to do is to bring people together so that we can have civil discourse on those things which have an immediate impact on Americans where they live. And that's generally designed to be within 12 blocks of where you live. If you are not both registered and qualified to vote in your primary, you need to be so. You have to deal with things that you may not even know. And if you're not sure that you're registered and qualified to vote, the likelihood is that you're not. This is not something that you did. It's not laziness in your citizenship. It's something that's been done to you by parties who want you not to vote. And voter suppression, ID laws, limiting election days, doing away with Sunday or early voting, voter registration, limits to ballot boxes that may be plentiful in some precincts and solitary in others, are just a few of the things that are going on around the nation as we speak to suppress your vote. The fact that a vote could be suppressed in the American system is anathema to democracy itself. There is nothing more sacred in America than the citizen's right to vote. Although there are those who are working very, very hard every second of every day to take that right away from you. And if it's done, if you're not, you know, the Secretary of State decides you're going to call the voter rolls, they send out registration notifications to, say, 300,000 people. They send them to the address that was first used the first time the person voted. If they get no response from that, you're eliminated from the vote, the voting rolls. Your history is eliminated. You then have to prove your qualification to vote, and you have to re-register to vote. And sometimes that registration is of a time or a space or a day that makes it impossible for you to vote in this election, which is exactly what is intended. It goes beyond the issues. It goes beyond the people. It goes beyond the party. It goes directly to citizens. Why is this involved in the war on reason? Because of the reasoning used to do it. It's not reasonable, but it's possible. And therefore, unless it is overturned, it's effective. We saw in the election of 2012 that there were gerrymandered districts in certain states or commonwealths which made it nearly impossible for any candidate other than the one selected by a few to even participate in the election, much less win one. We have untold amounts of money that are being poured into local races, state races, that are affecting you at your kitchen table. And that's where I want to talk to you, from your kitchen table. Call me at area code 646-929-2495. And participate. What do you got to lose? If you're frustrated, I want to hear from you. I want to know what you're frustrated about. If you'd like to know that, you know, is there something you can do about it, call me. If you'd like to be able to do something to make a difference, call me. Beginning next week, we're going to go into the 6 of 8 battlefields that are involved in the war on the poor. And it's getting to be a long list of a litany of evidences that there is, in fact, a war on the poor. And the war on the poor is to make more people poor and to bring the profits of the country to the few. And there's a lot we can do about it, but you have to do it. The first one is you have to vote. The hope of those who would seek to control this country by other than democratic means, the first one of all of them is that you won't vote. And if they can't make you not vote, they hope that you'll stay home. Because if you stay home, and this is the typical midterm election where very few people show up, democracy loses. And I know that you've heard me say this many times, but you need to understand that for several years now, democracy has been under direct attack. It's been under direct attack by those who would remove it. It's not that they would make it better. They have no desire to make government more efficient. They say they do, but they don't. By their actions over the last few years, we've seen that they intend to remove every possibility from the average citizen having a say or a presence in the nation's capital. I find that objectionable. I have a radio show where we try to address in a civil discourse everyone with an opinion about a topic. That's one of the things you can do. There's an awful lot of people out here who are presenting airtime for you to contribute. We do it here at the Coffee Party Network. We do it at Netroots Radio and in other places. It's not that those who have a particular ideological bent, like Rush Limbaugh or Sean Hannity or Rachel Maddow or people like that, don't have access to your mind. But you need to understand that their entire network's dedicated to being solution creators, to being action innovators, to be those people who can be the change they seek. Because democracy exists when the people who are under it use their power. And their power is their voice and their vote. Attempting to deny someone in this country the right to vote is a direct attack on their democracy, their citizenship. And everyone should be concerned if anybody in America is denied the right to vote for silly reasons like, you know, it's Tuesday. You're going to see more shenanigans in this election campaign cycle than you've ever seen before, and it's only going to get worse. Until we remove money from politics, until we revise our tax code, until we bring democracy back to the American citizen, those in power are going to stay in power. And there's plenty of reason to believe that there are many in power who should not be. Now, you may believe that those are Democrats, you may believe they're independents, or you may believe they're Republicans. The question is, do you have the voice to do something about it? The answer is yes. It's right here. And we're attacking the war on reason, or the war for reason, because we believe that it unnecessarily imbalances the process. It removes democracy from the conversation. And I personally have lived my life believing that using your voice is the most precious gift democracy gives you. Having a voice is guaranteed to you under the Constitution of the United States of America. If you look at some of the articles that libertarians and Tea Party terrorists, and that's the extreme version of the Tea Party, by the way, the Republican Party, I haven't seen any democratically oriented philosophies or planks or platforms that intend to remove some 17 amendments from the Constitution or to remove the Constitution itself. There are corporatists within the Democratic Party that need to be addressed, well, everywhere. The whole point is it doesn't matter what your party ideology is. It matters what your citizen ideology is. And if you are not registered and qualified to vote, you will not have a say. Now, you can write letters to your editor. You can talk to your representative. You can talk to your neighbors. You can have house meetings. You can have town hall meetings. You can have anything you want, so long as it is moral, legal, and ethical. And you can empower democracy in America and revive the strength of democracy that this country has known for well over 200 years. Those things that make our particular brand of democracy liberal, they generally refer to it as Western liberal democracy as a title, a classification. There are things that have been done in the name of democracy in the last couple of decades that most people would agree with a statement that's not democracy. And the world has spoken up and let us know that they don't appreciate us abusing our democracy where they live. And I've long said that the best antidote to despotism or dictatorship is the living out of the democracy we have. That a rising tide lifts all boats. That no one is insignificant. That every citizen matters, every vote counts, every voice needs to be heard. Now we're talking about Veterans Administration hospital scandals. We're talking about scandals in candidacies, you know, people being put up for candidacies in political races that organizers tend to hope will avoid airing of particular instances in the lives of potential candidates that are embarrassing or even disqualifying. But democracy lives most under your roof, the one where you live. And you are the guardian of that democracy. Citizenship empowers you to address the inequities or the failings of the democracy as you see them. But you have to have reason. You have to be able to argue your case. You have to be able to understand what the reality versus the fantasy is. And it's sometimes very, very difficult. It frustrates people to the point that they say, it doesn't matter, I don't care, I'm not going to participate. And that's why democracy is at risk, because there are those who want you to feel exactly that and nothing else. And we find that to be objectionable. We don't believe that's appropriate. We don't believe that it is a specifically positive outcome. We, being this show, our staff, our volunteers, the Coffee Party, NetRoots Radio, NetRoots Nation, and generally those willing to investigate what they see to determine the truth and to alter the arc of democracy in a way that is more often than not bent toward justice. We had the 60th anniversary of Brown versus Board decision by the Supreme Court this week, and there was a lot of stuff made about it. Yet there's ample evidence that resegregation of American educational institutions is ongoing. And if you've been the victim of that or you see it where you live, I'd like you to call me at 646-929-2495 and let's talk about it. I'm going to take a short break here. And when we come back, we're going to talk about what you can do about this stuff that's going on in the war on reason. Because we want you to understand that you are empowered to do something about it. And we want you to know that it's not necessarily a useless opportunity to attempt and, in fact, sufficiently address the grievances that you have within your own democracy. I want you to think about the one thing that you find most frustrating about governance or government in America today, and then I want you to talk to me about it. We'll be back in 5 minutes.
The glory of the coming of this is Dan Aronson, host of Coffee Party Radio's Press One for Democracy. Did you know that there's an entire lineup of Coffee Party Radio shows? We at P1FD kick off each broadcast week Mondays at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Thursdays, our executive director, Janine Loudon, hosts Lunch with Loudon, starting at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Saturdays, Egberto Willis hosts Politics Done Right, starting at 1 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And the latest addition to our Coffee Party Radio family joins us every Sunday at 4 p.m. It's Progressive Politics, Tennessee Style, with your host, Bud Fields. And remember, unlike our current federal government, Coffee Party Radio is of the people, by the people, and for the people. Each show, you'll have the chance to call in at area code 646-929-2495 so you can stand up and be heard. When you can't make it with us live, remember that all of our shows are available to you 24/7 in our online archives. So again, this is Dan Aronson on behalf of all Coffee Party Radio hosts and our entire membership, saying thanks for joining us to discuss the issues of the day, the Coffee Party way.
And we're back. This is Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. I am the Tennessee Progressive, Bud Fields, coming to you live from south and slightly left of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia, on this Sunday, May 18th, 2014. I'm glad you're here with me, sitting on the porch. It's feeling real lovely outside. It's about 68 degrees with a slow, soft wind. You can hear the babbling brook. I was reading an interesting article by a forthcoming book. Garrison Keillor of Prairie Home Companion fame has written that is really interesting. It's called the Lake Wobegon Reader, or the Prairie Home Companion Reader. And Garrison talks about his age progression from when he was long-haired with a beard, thinking that he would probably, you know, die early in a tragic way like Buddy Holly. But he didn't. And now he's pushing 70, and he's looking at the years of longevity as a positive. And he talks about some of the things he's witnessed in his life. And I'm thinking 50 years ago, 60 years ago, was a long time. We talk about the anniversary of the Brown versus Board of Education case. And in 1964, there was a young Olympian named Cassius Clay who took gold in Rome. 2 days later, he announced that he had joined the Nation of Islam and eventually changed his name to Muhammad Ali. One of the things that we tend to forget was how improbable it was that he would win. But that win did something for all of America that exists even today. I remember in 1964 Kentucky Derby and the Outlier, something like 31-1 odds, named Jordan Dancer. Stole the show at the Kentucky Derby and became one of the most successful sires in the history of horse racing. I remember a young Army lieutenant in those same games at Rome from the United States winning the 10,000-meter run, the first and only American to ever win gold for that event. People continually tell me that it's impossible for one person to make a difference. I don't believe that. I've never believed that. I don't believe it today, and I'll not believe it the second I pass on from this mortal coil. I believe it is every bit the possibility, at least in this country, and potentially in every other country in the world, to make a significant difference that's going to affect your nation for years. I had a mother who did that, a father who did that. They didn't do it intentionally. They did it because of who they were. And they gave me a belief that I had a responsibility to do what I could where I saw injustice. I saw an interesting show last night that talked about a couple of extreme dictatorships, putting them side by side in a very interesting way. The two dictatorships discussed were North Korea and Burma. And in Britain, there are those who, they're involved in the election process right now in Britain. And there are those who are calling for their former leaders, as well as American former leaders, to be brought before the International Court, the International Criminal Court of The Hague, for war crimes. And it started basically, I mean, it was resounding echoing of people's sentiments, but it was said first by one individual. And the fact that that one individual spoke what was on the mind of so many people resounded in the hearts of people that he didn't even expect to have as allies, and all of a sudden the guy's in the British Parliament. And we see this around the nation when we have new first-time entrants into the political process who are not only fighting campaigns but winning campaigns for elections through the primary process. What is the difference? The difference is these folks are making reasoned argument as much for their position as against other positions. It's not easy to do either way, as I hope you're learning. But the simple fact of the matter is that's how democracy works. Democracy doesn't work by invading someone else's country. Democracy works best when the people that are repressed or oppressed or occupied take it upon themselves to act as citizens in democracy. That's the way governments are toppled. That's the way issues become real. We find the financial meltdown of 2007, 2008 to be affecting us still today. How does that look where you live? That's what we want to know on this show. Do you agree with it? Do you disagree with it? How is it at your kitchen table? We hear that the economy is in a very fragile recovery, but most Americans don't see it. It doesn't seem to be recovering where they live. You have an opportunity on this show and with other shows throughout the internet, the new radio regime, I guess, webcasts and Spreaker and Hangouts and all that stuff, to engage and become engaged in becoming the change you seek. It's not enough just to talk, although we hope that you will talk civilly with respect and honor to everyone with which you come into contact. But there's a process. And when you understand the basics, or to that degree necessary of any issue, then you should be able to do something about it. As an informed, educated voter, you should be able to vote your conscience in those alignments with candidates that are more closely aligned with your beliefs. If you believe that America is on the right course and that things should continue the way they are, then you should vote that conscience. If you believe that America is on the wrong course and we should turn away from the way we're going to a different way, you should vote your conscience. But you should vote. And I will tell you that there are times when I get so absolutely exhausted from saying that, it brings tears to my eyes. Nevertheless, that is the most important thing a citizen can do. And then you can get involved. You can write a letter to your editor. You can write your congressman. You can write your senator. You can write your president. You can write your city council. And you can state your objection or your passion. You can talk against something, but you can also talk for something. Now, I want every child in America never to be hungry again. I want equality for women. Because I want all citizens to have the full measure of the protections and responsibilities and obligations of our Constitution. I don't see that as being a limiting factor to democracy. I see it, in fact, as being an empowerment of democracy, as I understand democracy and liberal Western democracy to be. I don't want to go somewhere else and force people, as President Bush said, to accept our version of democracy whether they want it or not. I disagree with that notion. That's me. That's my opinion. What's yours? Just for the purposes of explanation, I will point you to a blog that I write where I put my opinions. I try not to be too opinionated on this show because I want to hear yours. And I want you to know that your opinion matters. It matters right here. And there's a place where you can go to see what mine is and to interact with me in that blog through comments. You can call us on air at 646-929-2495. You can go to Netroots Radio on Sunday mornings at 6 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time and hear replays of this show. And there's a live chat there that we can get involved with. We'll have Google Hangouts. We'll have Spreaker webcasts. All of these things are nothing more than giving you the opportunity to interact with democracy. From now till November, I'll be asking you the question when you come on the air, are you registered and qualified to vote? How do you know? So I'd like you to be able to answer that question honestly and frankly. And if you're not, tell me why not. I'm going to re-enter that link because it didn't take. There it is. There are people across the Coffee Party Network, radio network, who are working tirelessly in not only our organization but others to create the change they seek. And we believe that it's empowering to do so. It's tough work. It's nasty work. It's messy work. But it's necessary work, and you have to use reason. You have to be able to communicate your position. There are those who are doing everything they can to make sure that you don't do that. This is not some kind of underground cell. This is wide open, in your face, democracy at work. And if you don't like it, you continue to try and silence it. But what you've done is you've awakened a sleeping giant. And we see this every day. Americans are becoming citizens again. They're discounting the notions of their political ideology, and they're starting to look at what America means, both the good and the bad, and there's plenty of each. There are things that we need to preserve, and there are things that we need to adjust, and democracy allows us to do that. But the most powerful way to bring democracy to other worlds, to other nations, is to live out the truth of democracy where we live. And if one of us is not free, then none of us is free. If one of us doesn't have the right to vote, then we're all being suppressed. Because your vote is equal to mine. Whether you're black or green or yellow or red or brown, no matter your native language, if you're a citizen of the United States, your vote matters. Every single vote matters. Your vote is first use of your voice. And it is the one that most people who need to will hear. You know, if you have a desire to learn the political process, we can help you do that. If you wish to become involved in a political campaign or align yourself with people who share your values or your issue or your passion for a particular subject or topic, like equality for women or the removal of segregation from our education system, to empower public education to return to its previously vaunted beacon status. You've got to understand that people across the world are looking at us and say, what are you doing? There are people who have, because of what we have done, come to actively despise all things American. And as much as it is their error, it is our fault. We have to address it. And one of the first ways we can address it is by engaging in civil discourse. It's not necessary that you agree with me. It's necessary that you communicate. It's necessary that you do so respectfully and understanding that we can disagree without being disagreeable. And right now is the time when we have to do that, because there are more actions designed to hurt us in play than there are to help us. The Senate had an opportunity to reinstate unemployment benefits. That was the bill that the House passed. The Senate decided they were going to put special amendments on it, like they required, in order for the bill to pass, that the Keystone Pipeline be approved or that Obamacare be repealed. And they wound up filibustering two bills in the Senate last week that they created, that they endorsed, because of political chicanery and legislative manipulation that killed those bills. They purposely put poison pills on their own bills so they could filibuster them, so that the core purpose of the bill would not happen. You need to be aware that this is going on, and it needs to piss you off. You're being treated in a disrespectful manner by those you elected to represent you in Congress. You need to do something about that. The best way to do it is at the polls. But you can write letters to them. You can call them. You can have town hall meetings. You can invite them. You can go to where they are and ask them questions respectfully. You don't need to show up and chant or disrupt anything. You don't need to hold up offensive signs or to wear offensive clothing or to call for the execution of the sitting president of the United States with some expectation that that is both reasonable and allowed, because it's neither. That's unreasonable. There's fallacious logic in play. The fact that only 300, quote, patriots, they're not patriots, they're thugs, showed up in an estimated, you know, or an anticipated call for 10 million Americans to show up in Washington, D.C. to overthrow the sitting government. Evidently, about 10 million of those people they expected to show up thought maybe that wasn't the best way to go. There were American statesmen, there were legislators, there were activists, there were authors, there were generals who were slated to come and talk of this as if it were normal. It's not normal. And whether or not it's allowed, it's not normal. Now, these are extraordinary times, which sometimes call for extraordinary measures, but we still have to work within the framework of our legal system. It has to be ethical, moral, and legal. Or nothing happens. And nothing is so heartbreaking as to give your all to an effort that has no possibility of success, as many Tea Party members have found out. And a few months ago, the largest gain in identified voters was independents. That's no longer true. Democrats are taking that over. But we have to empower our citizens, regardless of their political ideology, to participate in the process. I want you to be registered and qualified, two issues, both of which must be positively met, so that you can vote in your primary and you can vote in the general election. And you need to understand that in many states, if you are not registered and qualified to vote in the primary, you will not be allowed to vote in the November election. This is what those who would suppress your vote intend. They don't want you to vote. They want to make it impossible for you to vote, and they're creating, through gerrymandering, through voter identification, through suppression, and any number of other tactics, they're making it impossible for millions of Americans not to vote. The anticipated total of those who will not be able to vote in the 2014 national elections is about 37 million right now. You need not to be one of those people. You need to come on this air and talk to me about what your concerns are around your kitchen table. There are many who are listening. There are many who will listen over the course of a week by the thousands to every episode of Progressive Politics Tennessee Style. Progressives deal with issues, with reality. They act. Coffee Party attempts to bring those people together for specific issues. We don't endorse candidates. We endorse issues. Whether or not that changes in the future is left up to the members of the Coffee Party. And that's the way it should be. We are, as a party organization, a social welfare education organization. We're not a PAC. We're not a 527 or a 501c3 or a 501c4. And you need to understand that according to the Internal Revenue Service Code, that's a different entity. It's an important difference. Our desire is to educate you so that you may become empowered to exercise your citizenship wherever it may be found. We look forward to those conversations. We look forward to engaging you where you live, where you are, as you are. And if we can empower you to become the change you seek, then we will certainly have done our job, especially if we can do it in a civil and respectful manner. I hope that we all may remember, regardless of who we are or where we are or how we engage each other inside or outside the Coffee Party, that like democracy, what we stand for is only validated and confirmed by our living out of it. And if we would be a leader, we have to walk our talk. And if there are leaders out there who are interested in walking their talk with us, we hope you will join the Coffee Party. We hope that you will listen to Netroots Radio and other sources of information that are at least reasonably safe, that regardless of the point of view, what you're most likely to hear most of the time is the truth. That is not some prearranged spin or part of some nefarious plan to make you poorer, to increase the disparity between those who have and those who don't. We stand as a determined group to engage the issues facing us as Americans. And as other member nations around the world become involved in their particular brand of politics, we hope that civility will win the day in Ukraine. We hope that civility will end the day as a winner in North Korea, in Burma, in Egypt, in Syria, and every point across the globe. Because we believe that democracy in its truest form is the very best way to live on this planet. But we need to understand that there are many, many people in this world who not only do not live in a democratic society, but do not necessarily wish to live in a democratic society. And they need to be respected. Sovereignty of a nation is its sovereignty, its identity. The sovereignty of the United States is under attack by those who believe that they can purchase this country. That it doesn't matter if citizens disagree with them. They can force legislation upon citizens without citizens being involved at all. And there are groups that are growing, much due to shows like this one that prepare, train, engage, send, recruit members who have a passion for a reason or a cause to become involved. We want you to be one of those people. Because that's the way we think down here just left and south of Nashville, Tennessee, along the Mighty Duck River in Columbia, where for the past 2 hours I have been the Tennessee Progressive. I again apologize for our technical difficulties. We will make sure that that does not interfere with the show once it's completed and reposted. Thank you for your attention today. It's nice having you up here on the porch, and I hope that you find goodness and happiness in your day from here on out. We'll talk to you next time. Y'all be careful out there, you hear? Bye-bye for now.